This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Enterprise BizBytes. We're going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj,
Majida Hashim,
Jeff Sandhu.
Stories today will be revolving around privacy, fertilizers, and solar, in that order. Glad that it's Friday. It's been a tough week for a whole bunch of us. It's glad to get to the end of it. Jeff, are you all right there, mate?
Yeah. Very good.
You've been you've had a busy week this week.
Very busy.
Very busy week, right? And Arvind, I know you went off to see, you spent a whole day yesterday enjoying Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, because the movie was, it lasted the whole day.
It does pretty much, it that feels long. Like it lasts the whole day, indeed. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with the show today, get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. Or on Twitter, of course, at BFM Radio. Okay, let's kick off with this first story then. This is pretty creepy, Jeff.
Yeah, well, you know, we are creeped out enough with movies like, I think, you know, Blade Runner, and to see, you know, some of the sci-fi. I've not watched it yet, but, you know, seeing some of the sci-fi comes into, you know, like, you see it on a big screen, you go, look, you can't help but wonder, you know, what if, you know, the future we live in becomes something like this. And then, obviously, you've got TV series like Black Mirror as well, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, has been kind of been on point quite a number of times.
A little bit too close.
Yeah. Even recently, the Apple 10 announcement of the OS 11 that, you know, you could animate your emoji. Yeah. It's something very similar that Black Mirror has done before in previous episodes. So anyways, a couple of months ago, Rilana Hammer from the Netherlands, she bought a very small internet-connected camera from a local convenience store, and she wanted to use the device to keep her keep an eye on her puppy while she's away. And it, lovely story, nothing interesting, and it's a common thing. We ourselves, we buy baby monitors and we buy cameras then, you know, from normal convenience stores. However, though, there was something a bit weird with this internet-connected camera that she bought. It started speaking to her. And I'll just play a clip of, you know, and then I'll let you know what exactly, you know, it's trying to say.
Sorry? No, English.
That sound came from a camera, like one of those webcams that you buy.
Well, I didn't even know that webcams were supposed to have a speaker on it, right?
I don't know how she didn't just burn the PC on the spot, like just set it on fire, buy a new one.
Right out of my window.
She posted it on Facebook. She posted a whole entire clip on Facebook. Wow. And the thing that she posted is like, I thought I was going crazy. That's what she was like. I'm like, yeah. Because it is just creepy, beyond creepy. To buy a new product, brand new, off the shelf, that markets itself as an internet-connected camera that you can keep in touch with your loved ones while you're away, only to find out that there's actually someone else behind this camera that could actually spy on you as well, and could not only just spy, could even talk to you.
Not only that, but from what I understand, the camera has a motor in as well, so this camera could actually follow you around the house.
Because it's just like, you know, your normal CCTV cameras that we would go out and buy from, you know, local convenience store, and it's we've gone to digital malls and we've seen how these devices, you know, they sell it for cheap, you know. It's like 99 ringgit or 150 ringgit, you can get your, you know, CCTV camera fixed at home and all. There's a reason why a lot of these, like, you know, CCTV cameras from trusted brands cost a lot of money, and you got to pay like a monthly fee or an annual fee as well. A lot of these, you know, proper brands, they charge you monthly and annually, and the reason why they do that, it's because it's an ongoing protection. Anytime you have any device that is connected to the internet, and if you're not paying any sort of protection fee for, you know, for your just like a monthly usage or your yearly usage, You are at risk, you know, unless you have like a massive firewall system at home and you spend, you know, hundreds and ringgits of, you know, buying systems or hardware, whether it's software or hardware, to protect yourself. But if you're just, you know, one of us, just buy a camera, plug into your power socket, you know, hook it up to your Wi-Fi, and then, you know, you could connect it to your phone, you're opening yourself to a whole lot of, like, just, you know, a black hole. This is not like, you know, obviously this is just probably like, you know, the person who's on the other end is equally as confused, maybe. I'm not too sure, like, how, you know, who's the other person. No one really knows who the other person is, but it it gives you an idea of just what has happened before, because we have seen stuff like the Mirai botnet that happened earlier this year that attacked using internet-connected devices. Mm-hmm. We've even seen WannaCry, the ransomware. How did that happen? That happened because of all these devices. These devices from manufacturers who, you know, make cameras back in the days when, you know, the internet isn't as accessible as to, you know, everyone is. Now, though, it's just an insane level of, you know, of connectivity that we have. Mm-hmm. And these manufacturers, they need to understand that, listen, guys, if you're going to make a camera, it's a security camera, and you're going to brand it for 90 ringgit, where is your security element in the whole camera thing?
I mean, looking at the manufacturers, I would... It's on the onus of the manufacturer to provide security as standard. It should be, you know. But like you say, I remember just a few years ago, you could Google, open camera access or whatever, and you could get video cameras overlooking motorways and airports and all kinds of stuff. This, though, takes it to an especially creepy level.
Creepy level, but at least it's an awareness of, like, you know, if you have, and I'm sure you do, like, you would have definitely, you know, just bought one of these devices.
Oh, a webcam
on
even.
A webcam.
Everyone has those.
You can even just use a webcam, and, you know, it's as long as it's connected to the internet, you have to think of your security platform. If you don't understand, like, oh, I don't know what security, then don't put that camera in there, because it's just like, you know, if you were to buy a car and you're not sure what car you're buying, then why would you want to buy a car?
In the first place,
So, like, if you're buying a camera but you're not sure the security layers of the camera, then why would you want to buy a camera? So, just understand things before you, you know, get into this. And because manufacturers, they just want to sell. They just want to make money.
Yeah, and the makers are saying that this is their first complaint. I think they said something like that. So, that's the weirder part.
It's just like, which is so weird. You make the camera that is connected to the internet, but you have no idea that something like this could happen.
Yeah.
That is just, for me, plain weird, and shows that, you know, security is at the bottom of their priority when it comes to building equipments like this.
So their response is absolute rubbish. We know nothing about it, of course.
But actually, it's not just a camera or a webcam that you buy. But right now, just a few years ago, people can hack into the system and actually just turn on your laptop camera. That has happened so many times before, and they're recording pictures and taking data. So anybody who has any recording device just has to be really prudent about who they give access to and when they and what kind of security
TVs
you have.
Too, yeah, smart TVs too.
Yeah. But this kind of leads me on to the next story that I wanted to talk about, and it's from the Business Insider, but the title, the headline is a little bit clickbaity, I'll be honest. The title is, Apple gave Uber's app unprecedented access to a secret backdoor that can record iPhone screens, right? Ooh. So let me talk you through this. So Uber's iPhone app does have a secret, or did have a secret backdoor to a powerful feature, and it allowed the ride-hailing service to potentially record a user's screen and access other personal information without their knowledge. So it's not disclosed anywhere in their consumer-facing information, of course, including their Uber's app, despite giving the company direct access to features powerful enough that Apple most always keeps them off limits to outside companies. Although there's no evidence that Uber used this access to take advantage of the iPhone features, the revelation of the app's access to privileged Apple code raises a bunch of questions, right? So when you look at this thing, now every iPhone app uses a thing called an entitlement. If you don't know what an entitlement is, it's basically a way for software to enable features like the camera or Apple Pay on iPhones and iPads, right? And most of these can easily be found and officially turned on by outside developers. But there are certain entitlements that are only used for Apple, giving the company's own software tight integration with the iPhone. These bits are marked with names that start with com.apple.private. Mm-hmm. And these are considered so sensitive that any third-party app found using them is often rejected from the App Store. So after digging around in the code, a whole bunch of researchers found that it uses an entitlement called com.apple.private.allow explicit graphics priority. And of all of the apps that were available in the App Store, that's tens of thousands, this was the only one that was allowed this kind of access. Now, if you look back to when the Apple iWatch was launched, Uber was featured as one of the launch apps for the Apple, you know, the Apple Watch. And so that kind of got me thinking, well, maybe that had something to do with it, and maybe that's why they were granted access, because it was featured at the entire show and everything. And a little bit of digging showed me that it was a specially crafted API for the Jeff, do you want to quickly explain what API is?
It's just basically a toolkit that you know, people use to build an app.
Right. So that API was then used for the at the time in development Apple Watch, and the where the old Apple iWatch on version 1.0 of their iOS had the phone render the graphics for the Uber app, not the actual watch. And so then they needed that access to that private stuff to mirror the location of the driver from the phone screen to the Apple Watch. So if you're reading this, right, and you're freaking out because Uber have this ability to record your phone screen. No, they don't anymore. They did for a brief period while they were developing the software for the Apple iWatch. You know, but just the very fact that Apple said to Uber, it's okay for you to do this, I think that is where the question of, you know, privacy and should we be worried about it?
Well, they did come out and say no to the FBI.
But eventually they turned around, right?
They didn't. The FBI just managed to find some guy to hack into the phone itself. To this story, I think, like you mentioned, Rich, it's a bit clickbaity in a sense because it's something that's been, like, it's done and dusted already. It's
right.
Like, it's sorted already. But yes, it does leave us to that bigger question of, like, you know, what kind of privileges that these apps are getting. And, like, you know, just because Uber is, like, featured on Apple's keynote, does that mean Uber gets, like, a higher rank of, you know, what kind of entitlements they would get from the app? Because we all know, to be honest with you, Apple can give you an iPhone for free. Like, they don't need to sell those phones because the money is in the data that you use. Same with any other phones, literally. So it does come down to what are they trying to monetize here? And, like, thankfully, though, this is just like a test to show you what kind of scary things can be done. The good side of it is that at least Apple has its foot in the right place when, you know, something like this happens, something like, you know, the FBI case with the shooter who was using an iPhone and, you know, they wanted to get access to the iPhone and FBI was, like, you know, forcing Apple to, you know, bend the knee in that sense, right? And give us the access to the backdoor. And Apple's like, no. And kudos to them. They stuck to it. They said no. And hopefully in the future, they will keep saying no. I'm not too sure about the future, whether they would keep saying no, because, you know, the one time, yes, when it happens way too often, I'm sure they would, you know, figure a way out and then what, right? Mm. So, yeah.
All right, let's take a short break. We've got some music coming up. It is the Hollies with The Air That I Breathe. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Well, I'm boyish and I'm 40-something, but I'm certainly not a millionaire. Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Blow on a Friday.
I'm just being honest. Yeah. I'm in the studio clearly with Jeff Sando over here, Majida Hashim, and of course Arvind Yuvaraj, who's going to give us our next story in just a couple of minutes. But if you want to get in touch via Twitter, we're at BFM Radio. Or of course, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Arvind has a story about engineering crops.
Mm-hmm. Engineering crops that fertilize themselves.
All right.
Yeah, that's
yeah, I'm
that's
not. Come on then.
It's about a startup called Ginkgo Bioworks. First of all, any startup that has the word ginkgo in it, I'm already a bit suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, it already is a bit dodgy, but they are doing some good work. They are a genetic engineering company in Boston. They have teamed up with Bayer. Bayer, of course, is the multinational biochain company. I think they own few pharmacies, if I'm not mistaken. And they are going to come up with an unnamed ag tech startup. That's what they're calling. They have yet to name it. And what this startup is going to do is they are going to come up with ways that plants can fertilize themselves. So right now how it works is they use nitrogen in giant factories. Factories put out nitrogen and then they spray it all over the crops.
Yeah.
And nitrogen is essential for plants to fertilize themselves. It transfers it from nitrogen to ammonia, and then the process keeps continuing from there. But there are a few plants that can do it themselves, like beans. Beans can fix nitrogen by working with the bacteria to pull nitrogen from the air.
Beans are good for your heart. The more you eat, the more you...
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Well, wow. Anyway, yes, we've gone there.
He's definitely there.
But wait, yeah. Okay, carry on about the.
No, but that's basically it. It is ammonia at the end of the day. Yeah. So what beans do is, so they depend on these different kinds of microbes and bacteria that are in the air. And the bacteria converts the nitrogen, and then the beans use the bacteria to fertilize themselves.
Right.
So they're self-sustaining and stuff.
Yeah.
What they want to do is they want to take that kind of mechanism from the beans and other plants that can do it, like peanuts. Peanuts is another one. And they want to apply it to the other plants that they have, especially like crops like corn, like wheat, and any kind of mass-produced crops that need to be that can double up the output if they are able to fertilize themselves.
I mean, this is great. I mean, we've spoken about crops that are self-sustaining before, and crops that produce an awful lot more than they should. And as we know, the amount of crops available is also relatable to the population of our planet, though.
Yeah.
That's the big issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do have a lot of doubts on genetic modification, though.
See, I know she does. That's why I was going to hit over to Magino in a minute. Just hold your horses just for 1 second. I mean, and again, the big debate of GM crops, you know. For me, I don't really see it as much of an issue, but that's my own personal take. Magida, I know you have a different opinion, which is now why I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the reason I'm skeptical is because we don't know what it has done in the long term. Now maybe we will have plants that fertilize itself, therefore we have we will reduce the germination time or the fertilization time. It produces more crop, they are stronger, more resilient. But what's the long-term effect onto the ecosystem or onto what the crop itself, because we are eating it? And then we don't know, and that makes me afraid.
I mean, they're saying that the crops that can do it themselves will have a smaller carbon footprint, because now what's happening is these fertilizer from fields, they just spray it on all the crops, so there's a lot of wastage.
Right.
And then it gets absorbed into the soil. Yeah, and
runs
then it,
off into rivers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So if by allowing the plants to do it themselves, there's less wastage. They're not saying there won't be any wastage, because even with like natural peanuts, they let go of some kind of side effect chemical that affects the environment in some way, but it's not like what's happening now. And that's what they basically want to do with this. They're also saying that there's not enough crops to sustain the future population. They're saying there's going to be like 11 billion by the end of the century.
Terrifying.
There's not enough chemicals or even nitrogen to sustain all the crops. They basically need plants to take care of themselves at this point. And that's what they're planning to do with this new startup. There's no name for the startup yet, though, so they're just testing it out. And they've tied up with Bayer, like I said. So Bayer has the resources, and they have like this whole farm and this whole lab of microbes, and they're going to start testing one by one and seeing which microbes work with which plant.
It's so strange. We speak about Bayer in terms of, you know, they're the ones that could be helping create more life, and when you look back at their history, and you know, years and years ago, it's just a weird how things turn around, right?
But a lot of companies do that, no? I mean, they've made mistakes in the past, and then they sort of they want to fix it in the future. They're aware of environmental damage and stuff. Yes. Yeah, you know?
Right. Jeff, do you have any opinions on GM-modified crops?
Nah, I think if it's just they're going to automate themselves.
So
automation in the agriculture, and it's automated, like plants are automated.
Automatic plants.
Yeah, the automatic
plants. Wait, so we're going to have automatic crops, and we're going to have automatic farming machines, and we don't have to do anything, do we, at one point, apart from just eat these things?
Yeah, if it's modified, then yeah, just eat them. I mean, the farmers will still have to take care of them and make sure the soil is healthy.
They just push a button and say, robot, you go out there and till my
and
field. Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Spray the microbes all over the thing.
Yeah.
The thing when it comes to farmers, the reason why they are not using like organic plants, or they're not taking like they're not reducing on the nitrogen, is because the nitrogen is cheap and fertilizer is cheap. So they feel the most profitable way is to just pass the buck to the consumer, and they don't want to absorb that kind of cost. And then when it comes to organic farming, they say it is sustainable, but it's more difficult and it's more expensive, and it's not productive enough to feed the 7.5 billion people in the world. So organic farming is good for like small groups and like small amount of farming, but not on like the wide scale that we're doing now.
Not convinced though, because we still see around the world people are getting sick, and it is more prevalent now than it has been before. So and that has to do with the difference and the changes in the things that we eat. For more than ever now, we are eating more chemicals, we're eating more pesticides. Maybe that's why we're getting more sick. Maybe we should try to be more at peace with the ecosystem, and I'm still having these doubts about changing it.
That's where Elon Musk's brother. What is he gonna do? He's gonna have like those community farming. Yes. Like each small town will have like one small farm for themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could work.
Mm. All right, music coming up. Majida, me and you can argue during the break. hot heat coming up next with Bandages. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury with
Jeff Sandhu,
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yuvraj.
Had a story just a few minutes ago about gas.
Yeah,
we're going on from one gas to a different kind of gas.
Yep. Gassy story.
Yeah. So we've gone from nitrogen, and now we're talking about methane.
Yep.
Okay.
So there's this company called Mango Materials. They are a biotech startup from San Francisco, and they have come up with an ingenious method of transforming methane, a potent greenhouse gas, into plastic.
Oh.
Yep.
I just love how she dropped that.
Yeah.
It's deadly, but now we're making plastic.
Yeah. So we can't have beans that make their own ammonia and stuff, but we can have clothes that are made out of methane.
Yeah. Well, to go back to that story just now.
Oh, you've changing opened the things can of worms now.
But this is, now we're going to make biopolymer plastic, which is biodegradable, which is taking the methane, which is in the air that we cannot do anything about right now, and turning it into a material which is biodegradable eventually. So this process involves feeding methane to bacteria, which then produces a biodegradable polymer. I'm not going to try to pronounce the scientific name.
I was
name,
hoping you were going to try.
But the short form is PHA, and this polymer can be spun into polyester fabric, can be used for clothing, carpets, and possibly packaging, although the company is more focused on the garment industry because fast fashion is one of those things that is most pollutant in the oceans. The methane used by Mango Materials come from a waste treatment plant in the Bay Area, but the company is looking at partnering with other sources of methane, such as dairy farms, to get more. The technology creates value for methane, which is a novel idea. So right now, if you have a biopolymer shirt that's made from this biopolymer plastic from methane, and it goes into a landfill, it will biodegrade fully. And this is new. This is great because if we leave methane in the air, there's no way for us to capture it back into a way to sequester it in an environmentally friendly way.
Mm. Hang on, so once this stuff degrades itself, when it starts to degrade, what does it then release? Does that release more methane?
No, it completely biodegrades into soil.
Oh.
It becomes compost.
Oh,
it's
I
as
see.
Good as
yeah,
compost.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you have a regular polyester t-shirt and you're washing it, say, in a washing machine, tiny pieces of microfibers already wash into the drain, and this all drains lead to the ocean, and it can never be broken down. Plastics that exist in the world today will exist after we are gone and way longer after that. But fibers from this new material would degrade at the treatment plant itself instead. And even if this whole t-shirt happens to fall into the ocean, microorganisms can eat it. And it's safe for them to eat it.
Wait. So they take methane from the air, they harness it, then they turn it into a plastic.
They get the bacteria to eat it. And then the bacteria come out with this material that can be spun into the polymer.
So it's like
itself.
A different kind of silkworm, bacteria silkworm.
Yes.
kind of thing.
Yes, bacteria silk, which is a polymer, a plastic polymer, a biodegradable plastic.
So
polymer.
We get like a silky looking t-shirt, and then when we don't want it anymore, we throw it away, and it becomes the soil. It just biodegrades,
it
or like
composts.
animals can eat it.
Yeah, it composts. It will compost. And it's great because it's a cradle-to-cradle cycle. When you are making the shirt, when you're looking at the materials that will make these clothes, you're already thinking of the end product. And that's what may be the missing link in the apparel or the fashion industry right now. Mm. When you make clothes, you don't account for what will happen when nobody wants to wear it anymore, when it lands in a landfill or it lands in the ocean in pieces later on. But now they have that end in mind, and they know that if you buy this shirt, you will not be polluting the earth, even if you don't want to wear it anymore.
What do you do with your old shirts and t-shirts?
I pass it down. Like, I have cousins who are younger, and then if people want it, the ones that are like super faded, then I just throw them away. There's nothing else. Oh, I cut them.
And that is the problem, right? That throwing away bit. Because I do the same too. I pass it down to people that I know of my same size, and you know, those of them.
Same size as you?
Yeah.
You're a
I'm
giant.
I'm not a giant. Coming from one giant to the other. But yes, we've been passing it down, but you know, when it's too old and it's too faded, you tend to throw it away.
I try to cut it up as much as possible, like use them as like cloth or rags. I have a dog at home, so you know it becomes the dog's towels, plaything or towels or something to wipe up after they've like messed up the place, things like that.
It's interesting that, you know, at least we're going into this direction. Yeah, because you're right, Majida, like, you know, I don't think manufacturers actually think about the end cycle of its life cycle.
Yeah. Right. Mm.
All right. I really like this story. The future is bright then, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got self-sustaining vegetables, potentially, and then clothes that we can eat.
Do you think these will be more expensive or cheaper than what we have now?
For the beginning, clearly they're going to be more expensive. Mm. You know, but if it becomes, you know, adopted, mass adopted, then they should come down to the same price as everything else, as the clothes that we're paying for now.
I think regular clothes will be a lot more expensive because of the materials that, you know, it may be more harder to find the materials that, you know, make regular clothing than, you know, clothing that basically decompose.
Yeah. But there's one. Okay, just one more question. Like, if they're going to decompose or, like, biodegrade, when do they start biodegrading?
Yep. I mean, it can biodegrade immediately because it is compostable material. I'm sure it will last as long as it needs to. So this is where
you have the tier program. So if you want a t-shirt for $5, it will last you for 30 days. For $15, it will last you for 90 days.
It's the premium.
I don't think it's going to melt when you walk in the rain.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think as long as you're not burying yourself in soil, you should be okay.
I should be fine.
You should stay away from.
It's really interesting to look out and see how and when it comes out, how the durability of it.
Very interested. Okay, time for some music then. It is Queens of the Stone Age with No One Knows. When we come back, our final story of the day. It is Elon Musk and what he's had to say about Puerto Rico and the electricity situation over there. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. It's our final story for today. So our story is Elon Musk says that Tesla could rebuild Puerto Rico's power grid with batteries and solar.
Yes!
Right?
That's awesome.
Please go and do it.
Right, that's the kind of reaction that I was looking for. So what he started doing, I don't know if you knew about this, but they quickly started quietly shipping power walls there to try and get power back on some of the houses with solar arrays.
Nearly, 60% of people in Puerto Rico don't have power? Yep. That's just...
Now, what he's saying is that Tesla could rebuild Puerto Rico's power grid with batteries and solar on a bigger scale. Mm. Now, after it was pointed out that Puerto Rico's destroyed grid is an opportunity to build a better one, he got on Twitter, of course, Elon Musk, and he said, right, this is a quote, "The Tesla team has done this for many smaller islands around the world, but there is no scalability limit, so it can be done for Puerto Rico, too. Such a decision would be in the hands of the Puerto Rico government, the PUC, which is the Public Utilities Commission, any commercial stakeholders, and, most importantly, the people of Puerto Rico." Mm. So that tweet was fired off by Elon Musk, and then Puerto Rico's governor responded just a few minutes later, "Let's talk. Do you want to show the world the power and scalability of your Tesla technologies? Puerto Rico could be that flagship project." So obviously he's referring back to the projects that they've recently done on other islands, stuff on Kauai and on the American Samoa as well. Yep. They did stuff there. Mm. Now, it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, Puerto Rico, it's a large island, and this could genuinely be the start of something that we've wanted to see happen, right?
Mm-hmm. It's so good to come out of, you know, something as horrible as what has happened with, you know, Puerto Rico, to see technology yet again
saving the day.
Now, of course, there are going to be some doubters who are saying, "Oh, you know, he's just jumping on the bandwagon of a natural disaster and blah blah blah."
And that's why he has to do this. Right. That's why he has to take this opportunity.
What are the other things that is happening? You know, to try to get them back up to, you know, to get them power, to get power back to Puerto Rico.
Well, you've got Trump throwing
Did you see
that video?
Yeah. So, like, you know, besides that, like, you know, it's just that, you know, to get power back to Puerto Rico and using, you know, this traditional, you know, power cables and stuff, it's hard because you know, the city is flooded. It's a horrible state what's going on there. And the best way to do it is to
You know, start from scratch, build from new. Imagine if this is a new, completely new land altogether, right? And that is where you need to, like, okay, let's abandon, you know, building old infrastructure again, because, you know, in the coming years, it's going to be redundant.
Yeah. And it's going to get wiped out if there's another hurricane.
And it's going to get wiped out. Why not we look at something that could prevent, you know, something like this to be destroyed?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Elon Musk is that one visionary person who is daring enough to, you know, go out and do a thing. The only thing that just captures my attention is that these guys talk on Twitter.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Like, it's a deal done on Twitter. It's practically done.
I am so sure when Twitter was being created, the co-founders never thought, like, you know, not this is the platform that is going to save humanity.
Or destroy humanity.
Another person who's, like, you know, going all guns blazing using the same platform, right? So,
this got me thinking, really. You remember years ago when Microsoft Office was first launched, right? What they did, and this was a really smart move. Microsoft Office gave copies of Office to students for free before it became mainstream.
Yes.
Then what happened, right? Everybody learned how to use Office as a student, and when they got to the workforce, they had to then say to their bosses, I only know how to use Microsoft Office. So people then had to buy Microsoft Office to make sure that their company ran well.
Mm. Yeah.
This is Elon Musk's way of doing the same thing, just in a very different way.
In a very Elon Musk way.
A very Elon Musk way.
If Elon Musk can do this, then he will go from being like the next big thing into the big thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like people, all the naysayers, everyone who has, like, doubted him before, will have to take a step back and go, like, okay, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
It's not just like giant plans that are not going to work for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is like the perfect platform, because there are other people who are not doing much, because, you know, Puerto Rico is surrounded by water,
big
ocean water. So at least it's nice to see someone like Elon Musk, like, stepping up with an actual plan. Whether or not it's going to work is a different thing, but at least it makes sense.
Try it.
I mean, obviously, I mean, there has been no discussion of price or anything like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you were the CEO of Tesla, would you be thinking to yourself, I should do this for free? So that the entire world can see it?
Of course, yeah. Right. Just as a, it's like a project, right? It's a test project, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously, it's not going to power the entire country. Even if he gets, you know, 20% of the city back into, you know, to running in running conditions, that itself, it's a success.
Mm.
Then from there, you could then go up to the US government and say, hey guys, before you start investing in old infrastructure to rebuild Puerto Rico, let's do this. Let's do power walls.
Let's try
this, because I've already got 20% back on, and I just need more. It just needs something, because apparently, you know, doing small islands, taking them off from coal to renewable energy isn't impressive enough. Let's then do a bigger country, and it's just great to see something like this happen. It's happening in a really sad state that is Puerto Rico at the moment,
and for a country that really needs it.
Absolutely, terribly needs it. Right. We've come to the end of our stories for today. But what we want to suggest is some podcast that you might want to check out over the weekend.
Yeah. Yes.
I know you had a bit of a talking session yesterday.
Yesterday was a really long, was like a 56-minute session between me, Karam, Sharmila, Karam and Karamjit Singh and Sharmila Wallace. She's they're from Digital News Asia. But we had a special guest, Kanis Warren from Nida Rooms. And we talked about Nida Rooms is one of these, a company that just secured, you know, 5 million US dollars of funding, and what he did was he fired his entire senior management right after the funding. And the reason for doing that was to build speed and innovation. So we had a long discussion, 55 minutes of it, and also a whole bunch of other stories. Go and check that out. Really good stuff.
Alright, lovely stuff. And Arvin,
So I did Five for Fortune this week. This week I spoke about fintech. So I've been doing like a bunch of episodes like this where I take like buzzwords that are picking up a lot of speed lately. And then like one of it is fintech. So I explain what fintech is, who regulates fintech, why fintech came about, what it covers, and the advantages and disadvantages of fintech.
We had another one today, AgTech. That was a new one today. It's the first time I've heard that actually.
AdTech.
Yeah. Have you heard that one before?
Yes. Yeah. A couple of years. But it's
it's very small kind of thing, I think it will be another buzzword come 2018.
Because Majida will be all over that for sure, right? Yeah.
Yeah, anything that that improves education, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay, so what we'll do, quickly run through the stories that we covered today then. We started off with...
Yeah, so I did a story on how internet-connected devices like your small little cameras are actually a risk to your security, even your phones to some extent as well. Mm. We've had a guy who WhatsApped us and he was mentioning even phones could be hacked as well. Yep. And this is because a story that came out from Netherlands, a woman bought this small camera from a local convenience store and it was really creepy because the camera started talking to her.
Hola, señorita.
Hola.
She said, hola, señorita.
Yeah. So creepy.
My word.
Very creepy.
We then moved on to a story about how Apple gave Uber's app unprecedented access to a secret back door. That was a while ago, but they actually did do that. We then moved on to...
A startup called Ginkgo Bioworks. They're engineering crops that can fertilize themselves.
We spoke about a biotech startup called Mango Materials from San Francisco that will make clothes out of methane-eating bacteria.
What a great, cool concept that is.
Yeah.
We then wrapped up, of course, with a discussion how Elon Musk has said that Tesla could rebuild Puerto Rico's power grid with batteries and solar. The future is almost upon us, folks. Right, it's time for us to wrap up, but don't go anywhere because after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. It is Jaffrey Ibrahim. He's the CEO of the Collaborative Research in Engineering, Science and Technology, also known as CREST. So the electrical and electronics industry makes up 36% of Malaysia's total exports. Globally, we are the 7th largest export of E&E products in the world. The morning run spoke to Jaffrey Ibrahim, the CEO of CREST, to discuss Malaysia's E&E industry and what needs to be done for them to move away from low-cost and labor-intensive approaches, as well as developing more high-value products. On behalf of Jeff Sandu, Majida Hashim, Arvin Uberaj, and me, Richard Bradbury. Have yourselves a lovely weekend, folks. We will be back on Monday, of course. Same time, same place from BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.